Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my name is Kyle Tierman. Thank you for letting me inside your head. Quick thanks to our sponsors. Santa Cruz Medicinal CBD makes potent CBD. And right now I'm going to be blowing up their CBD-infused deep sleep caps, which is made from 200 milligrams of L-theanine, which is a great sleep aid, 150 milligrams of valerian root, and 100 milligrams of cannabinoid hemp extract. Nothing else besides that. Santa Cruz Medicinals CBD-infused deep sleep caps are available at scmedicinals.com. You can just click the link below and type in the code name Kyle10 for 10% off. By supporting them, you're supporting this podcast. Also, thank you to RPM Training. They make functional fitness gear. They make jump ropes. They make workout shorts. They have a complete Atom kit, which means it is built for at-home workouts. And you can go to rpmtraining.com, type in the code name Kyle10, and get 10% off. That's it for now. This episode was recorded live at Ohana Fest, where I had the opportunity to host a bunch of interviews at the Storyteller's Tent, while Eddie Vedder and the like were jamming on the big stages. Super fun. Have not had a chance to do many live podcasts before, and it was a new experiment for me. Thanks to the people who came out. It was great to meet a few of you in person, and would like to be doing more of these now that we can do live events again. This was a three-way podcast with Nora Vasconcellos. She's been on the show before, with Albie Lair. They are a power couple, and Nora is a professional skateboarder from Oceanside, California. She was Adidas' first female pro skater, won a world championship, and won Transworld's Reader's Choice Female Award. Nestor Junkins is new to the podcast. He is also a professional skateboarder for Adidas and the founder of Salad Days, a nonprofit based in Los Angeles, California, that operates around the world by visiting developing and underserved skateboarding communities, donating skateboard equipment, providing mentorship, and partnering with local nonprofits to spread the gift of skateboarding. Please welcome to the show Nora Vasconcellos and Nestor Judkins.
This couch is huge.
It's a huge couch. Come on close.
All right. Sit on the big comfy couch.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us, Kyle.
Is this your first day at the fest?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we both just got here about a half hour ago.
Yeah. I feel like all the artists who come up, they're like, this is the first time I've played in 2 years. And all the people are like, this is the first time I've been around other people in 2 years. We're all just trying to figure it out.
I feel like that. I feel like this is my first time here at this specific festival ever, so that's exciting.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. Very, very nice.
Have you been here before, Nestor?
No, my first time too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's rad, yeah.
So I wanted to talk first about this concept that, Nestor, you and I were talking about just recently, which is how skateboarding makes you perceive architecture differently.
Yeah.
So we were sitting on the bench here, and you're like, you know, once you become a skateboarder, you never see a bench the same way again.
Yeah, it definitely alters your perception of common, you know, day-to-day architecture that most people interact with in a normal way. But for us, it kind of like rewires our brain, so we're always scanning, looking for like natural architecture that's good for skating. So yeah, a bench, instead of just sitting on a bench, we're like, ooh, this is good, or oh, this material's not that great to skate, so it, yeah, I don't know, I wonder if I'm going to be, like, an old man still looking, you know, everywhere I go, looking for a good ledge or something. Right. Or the elusive natural quarter pipe, you know?
Oh.
Yeah.
That old thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching the movie Batman versus Superman, and there's a specific scene, this is, like, 4 or 5 years ago, in theaters, and there's a very specific scene where there's this, like, perfect natural quarter pipe in the movie. And I like grabbed my boyfriend at the time and I was like, do you see that? Do you see that quarter pipe? He was like, yeah, whatever, man. Didn't work out, clearly. But yeah, that and like the sound of skateboarding, just the like over the cracks in a sidewalk. Oh, like yeah. I'll be sitting at a bar with my friends or at dinner, and just like see the 11-year-old kids like fly by.
It's like Pavlovian. You like start salivating. You
yeah, like, my eyes yeah. go like fully black.
You're gonna have to get like an alarm clock that just is like skateboarding over the sidewalk, wake you up.
Oh, it's gnarly. I need to be like held by two people back. It's a whole ordeal, but. It's ingrained in us right. at this yep. point.
Right. Yeah, so when you go, like, when you go to a new city on a skate trip, you guys both ride for Adidas, you're going on these skate trips. As surfers, like, the first thing that we do is go to the different waves, and we kind of figure out, okay, what are the tides going to be good? What are the conditions that make this wave work? What's it like when you go in, you know, like, you land, give me an example, like, a place that you've landed in on a skate trip, and like going out and basically mapping the architecture of this city to skateboard.
Yeah, so basically, disclaimer, first off, I'm jealous of surfers because you get to go to a beach and go to waves. For us, when we go to a new city, we always meet up with a local, and the local will have like a whole list of the good spots to go to, you know, because they're in obscure parts of the city. But yeah, often, you know, we'll find ourselves going to a random skate spot in like a back alley, you know, some random part of the city. That's cool because you would never go there for any other reason than to skate. So we do get to see like hidden corners of places in that way. But I don't know. Sometimes I think sitting on a beach would be a lot nicer. Right.
We see the dark depths of civilization, I feel like, as skaters. Like we're always in sewage ditches, and I mean, for me, I like that transition-esque street skating, so I like to find something that resembles transition in the wild. But I mean, we went to South Korea together. We were in Seoul, and remember that thing we skated, and it's like the raddest spot in the world. It's basically this large bank embankment, and it has the tiny round flat bar, but it's like a big curved round bar around the whole thing, and you got to trick pretty quickly on it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of had to, a lot of times I am like the last one standing trying tricks. It's just like my process. And, but we both got tricks on this thing, and like the cool thing about skating that kind of is like the storytelling aspect of it is so much of skateboarding revolves around watching video parts and knowing where skateboarders did tricks at specific times and like the pros that you look up to, like did they skate that thing in Seoul? Because I've seen it so many times in video parts. So it's this really like remarkable thing of like when you guys go to waves that you've heard or dreamt about or seen in films. It's the same when we go to spots, you know, it's like we're part of the heritage now of this spot, like we've seen it, we've skated it,
right? Well, yeah. you get to name a new spot. Like I'm sure that there is a parallel in there that in the, when the surfers, they'll find a new wave, and that's like the most glorious aspect about it. You're like, no one's ever been here, or you're like, no one's ever seen this human-made architecture, or no one's ever skated it. Like you're the first one to do it. That must be a very cool experience.
It's a rare one.
Yeah.
It's a very rare one.
Yeah.
I think in the age of cell phones and how many devices we have to like film and the internet, there's so many spots that are still to be skated, but there's been a lot that's, you know, come up and been circulated. And yeah, I mean, I think Nestor's been to a lot of really unique places, probably more than I have.
Yeah. I think it tells to the fact that we want to always see something new, you know? And you don't want to, like, to keep it interesting, because skateboarding is pretty finite, the amount of tricks you can do. Everyone does it differently. Everyone has their own style and way of, you know, you get to a spot and how each skater interprets that spot and the way they skate, it's going to be different. But, you know, you want to, like, keep it constantly fresh, which does involve, like, seeking out rare architecture that's good for skating in places where they haven't made it too difficult to skate, you know?
Right.
In terms of security, or like here in the US, I know a lot of architecture schools are teaching how to design buildings without skateboarding that you cannot skate, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like a lot of like banked and curved buildings
skater,
are not allowed.
Skater proof
yeah.
building.
They yeah. don't like it.
Whoa.
It's weird.
That's evil.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What was it like taking your trip to Palestine, a place where, I mean, what's the skating community like in a, you know, a war-torn country?
Yeah, so I volunteered at a youth summer skate camp in Palestine for 2 summers, and there's an NGO who builds these skate parks around the world in developing countries, and Palestine's one of the places they built a skate park. So they're lucky to have this world-class skate park, and we went there to help implement skate camp lessons, you know, like just to get the kids out playing together, you know, so boys, girls could come skate, have art lessons, and just like, I mean, it just tells the whole, for skateboarding to be a release from your daily struggles on all levels, you know, like whether you're like us and we're stressed, we can go skate and release from that. And there, like, these kids don't have many options. Like, they're thrusted into a very difficult situation, but they have the skate park where they can go play and just do whatever they want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so much, I mean, I've never been to Palestine, but the kind of incessant difficulties that come with, like, growing up in a war-torn country, I would imagine the feeling of having an escape, and a healthy escape, like to be able to go to a skate park and be able to try a trick over and over and over again. Like you said, like you'll be the last one standing. Like you're not thinking about anything else for that time that you're just focusing your attention solely on that trick. And I would imagine that for the health of the human mind, like for a Palestinian kid, that would be so profound.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a lucky byproduct of skating is like what Nora said, is it's like you have to be very focused and determined to learn how to skateboard and how to like do these tricks and learn new tricks. So for these kids, it's a good way to, you know, focus all their energies on overcoming something as simple as like flipping your board or riding up and down a ramp. And overcoming the fear of dropping in is like the biggest thing. And we teach the kids, you know, just we hold their hands and help them drop in, help them overcome that fear. Cause dropping in is one of the scariest things you can do. It's like one of the hardest, like in surfing, like you got to really take that plunge.
Right. Kyle knows.
Yeah.
I've seen you skate, Kyle. Don't be bashful out here.
I'm sneaky.
You what? You're sneaky?
I'm a sneaky skateboarder. So, Nestor, how'd you get the idea for starting your organization, Salad Days? Was there a moment that you can point to when you had that aha moment?
Yeah. I think I first got the idea in 2014. I was on a skate trip in Madagascar, and I've noticed over the years traveling, like you see skaters everywhere you go, but this was the most far-flung place I ever went. And there was a whole crew of like 60 skaters, and they were nailing boards together just to make them work. And like, I don't know, making their own DIY skateboards and doing real tricks. And like, it was like a whole community. And it made me realize like, somewhere down the line is like, how can you just connect the access so these kids can have the skateboards? Like here, Nora and I, we've been living this pro skate world where we get free boards all the time and it's like no big deal. You can go to a skate shop and buy a board. But there, like, they could only get a board every once in a while when somebody came and gave them a board. So yeah, I had that idea and it was kind of like percolating for a lot of years. And I was volunteering with other organizations like in Cuba and Palestine who run these similar programs locally, you know? So I thought with Salad Days, I could just help with that connection of boards to places that don't have help.
Right.
Or don't have any access.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there are organizations of this type in a lot of different action sports. Like there are, you know, people in the surf community trying to get kids from low income neighborhoods out surfing more, people in the snowboarding community trying to get kids who wouldn't be able to get onto the mountain out there more. There's a great conversation of inclusivity across action sports generally, but I think that skateboarding has the lowest barrier to entry. Because when you think about it, like surfing, you need to learn the tides, you need to learn, you know, which spots to go to, when, like, there, it's just a more complex like language that you need to learn just to be comfortable out in the waves. Whereas skateboarding, really, like, you can give, if you just threw some skateboards into like the hands of some kids and they have a slab of cement, like the human mind and creativity is going to, they're going to learn some tricks and you're going to see some pretty cool stuff come out of it. Mm-hmm. And I just love that low barrier to entry that is specific to skateboarding.
Yeah. I think it's extremely accessible. I mean, that's like why I became a professional, was I was in the surf world for a long time, but I was from New England and I didn't have the backing of parents who spent half the year in Puerto Rico and the money to be at the beach every day surfing. And it was like, we can go to the skate park though, like once a week. And that was such a vital thing for me because it was such a simple thing. And it cost, you know, other than gas money, just about nothing to my parents. And yeah, I think things like that become such great tools for like the greater community, just because of how easy it is to get it into the hands of somebody who's like live, it's going to change. So that's kind of like, I mean, Nestor does it with the work he's done in Palestine and everywhere else. But it's, yeah, it's really, really wonderful how accessible it is.
Yeah. Nora, what has it been like for you in the last couple of years to have skateboarding open so many doors for you that are like, it's just from afar, it seems like you're being exposed and kind of thrust into worlds that are much bigger than skateboarding. And I was wondering if you could just talk about that experience.
Yeah. It's wild. I would say that a lot of it started with signing with Adidas. So that was like 2016. And that's mostly because I had been working full time for one of my sponsors, Welcome Skateboards. I've been working full time and then went, you know, fully into professional skateboarding, started traveling with Nestor and the rest of the Adidas team. And being part of a brand that kind of goes beyond skateboarding in sense of they work with so many originals, whether it's music artists, and they work in so many cities, whether it's London or Tokyo or Paris. It's just about being kind of thrust into different worlds, kind of situations maybe that would make you uncomfortable. But I don't know. It's definitely like one of those things where you kind of realize when you're in that moment of like, oh, this is when I need to really like absorb. I need to absorb all of this and just let it happen, you know?
Right.
You know, because it's especially when you kind of come from a place of fear or where you maybe think you're not capable, just kind of embracing it and being like, well, they think I'm capable. Right. So and yeah, I think there's a really, really large movement right now with the women in the LGBTQ queer community. And there's this really, really prolific kind of community behind that part of skateboarding that's just like we could never have expected kind of what's happening right now in the world of especially female skateboarding.
Right. So correct me if I'm wrong, but did you get to speak at the UN?
I spoke at the UN. That was insane. That was like not... It's like blackout. Like, I don't even remember what happened.
Like Frank from Old School when he's doing the debate.
It was mental. It was so wild. This was probably 2 years ago in New York City at the UN. It was in January. It was a bizarre, bizarre, cold, like, what is it? What's when it gets cold? It was like a deep freeze. Oh, you, whoa. I think you guys were still living in New York at this time. It might have been right around the time you moved to California.
So are you talking about like the culture of the UN is cold?
No, I'm talking
like
about New York City where we had to go to the UN. I'm talking about couldn't walk outside cold. And I'm from Boston, so it's like should know these things. But it was like bizarrely cold. I remember like we couldn't really go outside even in the day. But I was there for just a few days. Anyway, sitting at the UN, I was there to talk about... I was there on a board with a handful of other very predominant people in fashion. So it was like Dapper Dan and these people who were, you know, very prolific in the fashion world, you know. It was just very bizarre. I was there to speak on Adidas's behalf, but the whole story, the whole reason we were there was for sustainability. So I met a woman from Italy who had started an entire fashion line where she was creating a fabric out of orange peels. And I mean, beautiful, like silk-like fabrics. And there were just all these people who were doing really, really monumental things in the fashion world, because that world of fast fashion and like the way we consume what we wear is like very, very detrimental to the world. Probably worse than like the cars we drive and things like that. Like fashion is very, very dangerous. So yeah, we were talking about that, and it was just bizarre because I just sat on a panel and talked about a little bit about, you know, growing up as a woman in skateboarding, and also about what somebody like Adidas is trying to do with, you know, teaming up with brands like Parley and Prime Blue, creating different knits and materials that are gonna help us move forward as consumers without being the monsters that we've been to the earth.
Right. Well, to give you guys a chance to blow up your sponsor a little bit, I think that these people would appreciate it. So what is Adidas doing for ocean plastic?
Do you know?
So Adidas, I know Adidas, I forget the time frame, but company-wide, they're gonna transition from plastic, single-use plastic, soon, within the next few years. But they have been, you know, partnering with Parley, and they made a line of running shoes, and they just had the first skate shoe come out with it, made out of ocean plastics, which I think is great because skateboarding is, we destroy shoes. That's what we do. Like,
I know you guys still
like every 3 weeks.
This is a weird thing. Like,
it's a hard, yeah.
You guys haven't figured that out yet.
Like, no, it's
the
yeah.
skate shoe still gets destroyed every couple weeks.
So yeah, it would What's be nice the, for them to be made out of something better, you know? Yeah.
I feel like that's just like never going to happen because there's this weird balance of having just like a basic comfortable shoe that you can feel your board and is simple. And you're also like, you're destroying the board. I mean, you're destroying, yeah. Like, what we do is very destructive, whether it's to our bodies or to our shoes. And skateboards are pretty easy. But the shoe technology, yeah. I mean, with the Parley thing, it's been really cool because it's all about taking plastic from the ocean. So they do it, I think, all over the world. But I believe the factories in Taiwan, do you know about this? Where they bring it, and they literally thread plastic bottles and plastic into a thread, which becomes a knit fabric for, like, Whoa. Shoes. And then Adidas, when they have, like, a Prime Blue, if they have a shoe or a garment or anything that says Prime Blue. I mean, and if you've bought Adidas in the past 6 months, you'll actually see it a lot more. But if you have Prime Blue, that means, like, 40% of whatever you're wearing is this plastic.
Right.
So it's replacing polyester and a lot of other really harmful things. But I don't know. The thing is, like, when you have these giant corporations, it's just really important for them to start doing something because then it makes everybody else have to answer. So,
right.
I mean, that's why I'm proud to be an ambassador for Adidas, is just actually seeing them make that progress and do things like that.
Right. Well, it's easy to vilify a giant corporation, but you can't argue with the fact that if a company as big as Adidas makes a shift to their supply chain,
Everybody.
It's going to have a massive impact mm-hmm. on the world, and it actually creates a blueprint for a bunch of other companies to be better. The same way that Patagonia has done that, they're kind of a leader for other companies across
totally.
The whole industry. And like, and there are people at companies, they're all sitting around these tables, and they're like, okay, what should we do? Seems like people care about the environment, and they can go to another company and say, well, they did it this way. Maybe we can do it now. So it's just an example of how the decision at any one company has these far-reaching effects that will never totally be known, but it does have a big impact.
Totally. And it's, it's super rad to see. And even like going, when we go up to Portland, where Adidas is located, going in and not seeing a piece of plastic. I mean, it's all glass bottles, and they're really diligent with recycling and things like that. So I think it's really important when it gets really grassroots to the company as like a core. But I think going forward, it's really important to see trash as a resource, specifically plastic trash, because the earth has only so few resources, and we've done a pretty good job of like scouring them. And I think if we think of like the plastic floating around as a resource, it's like, hey, this is a free material. Mm-hmm. Like if you can garner it and hire people to manufacture it into what you need to create a shoe, it's just rad. And I think we're really getting into that positive circle of growth in that sense of like, oh, there's going to be a lot more companies, a lot more brands following this path and experimenting with plastic as a viable recyclable resource.
Right.
For skate shoes.
Totally. And it's like an entry, like taking on plastic pollution directly is like staring into the sun. Like you're like, ugh, I can only do this for a little while. This is really hard. But if you start from the conversation of skateboarding, and then there's a story into the shoe, into this larger topic, it makes it so much more palatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I think like skateboarding is such kind of like an urban craft. I mean, we spend so much time on concrete in cities, surrounded by trash, some of which we create. It's just a really good kind of way of reflecting, because skateboarding doesn't really put you in nature a whole bunch unless you're being creative. And
unless you're in Woodward.
Unless you're at Woodward. Unless you're in the like Sierra Nevadas at your element camp thriving. But yeah, I think a lot of the time it's really, really easy to ignore what's going on. But you being a surfer, and I surf as well, and it's just, you see it way more, you know, you see the microplastics on the beach and all the damage that's really happening and how quickly it's happening, where it's like, we're talking about parts of our lifetime and we're just one lifetime. Like the lifespan of a human is nothing compared to the last thousands of years.
Right.
So yeah, it's exciting to see skateboarding. There's so many unique people in skating who like Nestor and myself, but who like really care and really want to find ways to like make an impact. And that's kind of what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are at a cultural moment where you have this megaphone and people are starting to listen. It's very special.
Yeah. This is our megaphone.
That's the, you guys literally have a microphone.
I'm gonna take
right
this
now.
With me.
Yeah.
Just put it in the car. Just yell at people. Just like driving by. Throw your trash out, man.
Yeah.
Get a Yeti bottle.
Yeah,
what
where's that bottle?
What is that?
Yeah. So this is a kind of an odd question. It might be a dead end, but it goes back to this conversation of skaters seeing architecture in a different way. Right now, we are facing this incredible society-wide problem of isolation and polarization, and cities are built for people to get in their cars and not really be around any other people, and then they, you know, like go to work and they're in the cubicle or they work from home, and like despite being in maybe a large community, there aren't many places where people are connecting, like here at Ohana Fest, which is, you know, it's such a powerful thing for people to just be outdoors connecting. And I think skateboarding is very unique in the way that the way you can see skateboarding, one, is just a place for people to recreate and, you know, like drain their batteries and, you know, have fun, but it really also is a community center. And I wonder like if we could start rebranding skate parks as these kind of rare and important places for people from all walks of life to come together and commune in an increasingly polarized environment.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique outlets of skateboarding, is that it's labeled a sport, but basically it's like an individual act of self-expression, but you meet a whole community of like-minded people. And like you said, it brings people to a common area. It's physical, it's outdoors, so it has all that health aspects for us. But it brings people from all different backgrounds to that same cement. You know, it's like democratic in that way, where whatever background you have, and I mean, that leads to one of the bigger problems of polarization, like you said, is just lack of contact.
Right.
So it gives like skateboarding as an introduction, or as a vehicle, as a means to have a bridge to people you would never meet. And then you like invariably, like you start learning from their experience. And yeah, it's like, unless you're very hard headed, you're going to open up when you interact with another person. And when you're like just skating and clapping because they do a cool trick, or if they fall, you go and you help them up, you know? And then you go hang out after and you find out, oh, you live there. Like, oh, I live here. And you learn, I don't know, it opens a lot of doors.
Totally.
I think, yeah.
Well, and it is truly supportive, unlike surfing, where there's this huge supply and demand issue where, like, someone's going down the line, you're like, fall, 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 fall. Where skateboarding, they're like, yeah, like, go for it, bro. Yeah. Like, woo, because
polar opposites.
The ramp is going to be there all day long. You're stoked when a big crew shows up.
Yeah, there is a basic level of skate etiquette, you know? Like, right. If you don't share the space, like, yeah, you got to, like, take turns, you know?
Totally.
If you go and cut people off, everyone, no matter how good you are, right? People are going to be like,
dude. It's just so funny. I mean, you know my boyfriend, and my boyfriend is a professional surfer. And we're, like, totally opposite spectrums on, like, the general attitude. I mean, this poor guy. Love him to death. But he's just, like, he's this passionate, heartfelt, wants to just do all the good in the world in surfing. And he's grown up in this time where it's, like, he hasn't necessarily been given all the accolades maybe he deserves, and he just, like, is from Hawaii, so he has, like, all this, like, pent up, like, I can't surf there because everybody's too eggy, and, like, oh, he has all this thing, and it's like me, like, happy-go-lucky, like this is great, everything's awesome, like, go surf, and, like, I won't even know if someone's pissed at me in the water kind of deal.
Right.
And it's like that, even like our professions, like, just goes so, it, like, aligns so much with our attitudes. But yeah, I think speaking on the skate park thing, all of us have had some experience with skate parks, especially if we live in Southern California, because they are popping up everywhere. But I think there's going to be even more parks built. And I also think that, like, how many times have you driven by a football field that isn't a Saturday night, or a baseball field, or an empty sports field, you know, every day of the week? And then you drive by the skate park every day, and that you can just see the use of the public space that is a skate park is, like, it has to be the most used public space in the freaking world.
For sure.
Like, besides, like, your basic sidewalk.
Oh, yeah, there's no way a regular park has that many people recreating on a day-to-day basis.
And right now we're dealing with it where, like, since COVID, and because of, like, the same thing with surfing, where so many people have bought their first surfboards and are learning to surf, so many people have bought skateboards and are learning to skate. And it's like, there's so many days where I'm like, oh, I really want to go do this creative thing at the park and maybe want to go somewhere where it's pretty mellow. And it's like, I can't find a mellow skate park within 200 miles of San Diego, you know, like, everywhere's packed, and it's great. Like, we're stoked, it's awesome, but it's really cool.
Right.
It's really, really, really cool.
It is. And by and large, the resource of a skate park is more abundant than the resource of waves. And it's just making me think how
wave pools,
abundance of resources changes human behavior.
Totally. Like, and just, like, interaction. Like, when you go to a skate park and the whole world is basically laid out for you, in essence, you know, you have the skate park is your oyster kind of scenario, and you have a relatively positive group around you, you thrive, you know, and everybody, I think, gets a little bit more. Where I think if surfers use the skate park etiquette thing, like, let's just pretend all the best waves were coming in all the time, I think we'd all get more waves and we'd get better waves.
Right.
Like, pretend the surf is a skate park.
Right.
And you will get better waves. I practice this. I believe this.
I love that.
And I swear, I live in Encinitas.
I want to see a day where
a
new surfer drops in at the peak at Trestles and all the surfers start slapping their surfboards.
That's what I do.
And
those girls down there, they're all learning.
And applause.
And I, like, took them out. We went to San Onofre. Jill ran me over. But that's all right. That was not her fault. But yeah, I try to practice positive surf enforcement because it's lacking out there. So I, like, you know, it's just, you got to do it.
Well, what's hilarious is that skaters, I think, by and large, culturally, are still seen as these, like, menaces to society, whereas, like, surfers, it's like, oh, Beach Boys, you're just, like, mellow and cruising.
Whereas,
like, no, skateboarding is this, like, pulsing, emanation of positivity.
Yeah. Like, we're just nerds.
Yeah.
We're just.
You guys are solving the PR problem.
We're doing something.
I love that.
We're doing something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to, like, I want to do something in the skate park where it's like, make a silly video where it's like, what if we went to the skate park and acted like the skate park was going to disappear in 30 minutes? Like,
Right.
What would happen? Just full Armageddon, scorched earth scenario. Yeah. We got people dropping in on each other.
That's
boards
cool.
thrown.
Well, Nestor, I wanted to bring it back to you and hear a bit more about the future of Saladays.
So yeah, we've been working. So I started Saladays a year and a half ago. I've been volunteering and pretty much doing this stuff for 5 years, but we've reached like skaters. We've donated over 100 boards to skaters in 7 different countries so far, and during COVID. The best way to donate boards is still to bring them physically and then also to interact, you know, with the local skaters and help them like set up these skate programs. But so that's been on hold, unfortunately. But now we're finally starting to be able to go out and travel again. And we've been supporting skaters in Pakistan in 3 cities this past year. And we're going to make our first trip out there in November. And our goal is to try to build a skate park there. So we're going to go out there and start working on that and try to work with some local nonprofits to try to get some land donated. And we got another NGO who builds skate parks around the world who's just waiting. So, yeah,
right.
We're going to try to keep going and building up. And
that's awesome.
Finding more boards.
If people wanted to get involved with this, like if people wanted to get on a trip like this, help build a skate park, is there a way for them to get involved?
Yeah, I mean, it's all volunteer-based.
Right.
So I started it myself, but now the board has grown. I got 4 people on the board who want to help out, and the more the better, you know, people with experience,
sure,
like people who can build skate parks. I can't build skate parks, but I can help smooth cement. So if you know how to build the structure, yeah, we need help with anyone who wants to help donating boards, connections, anything, you know.
Nice. Yeah. So you're going to go on these trips and then you'll scout out hopefully land that you can get donated to build these skate parks?
Yeah.
Is that the first step?
That's our big, yeah, that's our initiative that we're working on right now. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's in one place, and then we're going to expand our reach to other countries and other places where they don't have any access to skateboards at all. So we got a few. I'm trying not to overcommit myself because I want to help everyone all the time, but it's limited resources. So we're trying to help in a way that actually makes a difference instead of just throwing out a few boards and leaving.
Sure.
Want to like, you know.
Yeah. Well, getting involved with kind of community leaders who are there. Like I'm sure that you guys have all experienced like in your travels, there are people in these various communities who are, for lack of a better word, influencers. Like there are ones who can kind of help the younger kids who are getting involved and they're going to stay there. So it's cool that you're getting involved with those people as well.
Yeah. It's building relationships with the local skaters who, you know, and then it gives them a leadership role for their skate community.
Yeah.
Cause it's not sustainable for us over here with too many skateboards to be like, oh yeah, we'll give you boards forever. Like we want them to kind of like, we want to give them the resources to start their own skate community and get connections, you know, so they can keep it going.
Yeah. All right. Well, zooming way out. Last thing I wanted to get you guys' perspective on is skateboarding in the Olympics. What's going on with that? What was it like?
I don't know what it was like.
You don't know what it was like? I mean, no. what
did
you
watch it?
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah.
It was wild. It was fun. It was. What do you think it was like, Nestor?
So I'm a little conflicted. I like it. I'm going to say that now. I like it. But going into it.
I feel
like
I just stepped on a landmine.
No, it's a hard one.
I don't even know
about
how to answer it's this, it.
It's this like old skate mentality, which you talked earlier. Like we're like, you know, we break the rules. We don't fit in. Like I don't see skateboarding as a sport, and I still don't, even though it's in the Olympics and it has a competitive aspect. But in the big grand scheme of things, I think it is good because it does introduce people to skateboarding. And, you know, we spend our life like getting kicked out of skate spots. So maybe it will like get some acceptance for us as not being a bunch of degenerates or whatever, you know, like you said, like that it's a legit sport or like a legit lifestyle. And yeah, it'll breed new skaters. More skaters will come out of seeing it on that level. So
well, I think about like all the places that have to be represented, and all the opportunity it gives to people who you know, if we were just doing the normal tour of skate contests, wouldn't have a chance, who, you know, are representing their country and doing something really profound. And I think that's super wonderful. I think that it's going to open up the door for, like, every recreation in every town to really have the idea of, like, hey, we have all this money set aside. Are we going to build a skate park? Like, let's do it. Or a spot or something designated to the community that, like, encourages kids and people and adults and whomever to, like, skate and try it and be in, like, a safe space. I think that's really, really wonderful. I think as it goes on, it will be executed better. But, like, the behind the scenes of it, it wasn't executed well. My best friend was the – one of my best friends is the female coach, and she just has, like, the most wild stories. But I think, like, in a whole, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to, like, kind of be able to, like, step back and look at it objectively in this way of, like, oh, I really thought I was going to hate this, but I'm sitting here, like, enjoying – my night, watching it, cheering, like I was jumping up, yeah, yelling for Alexis to win, yelling for friends and people I know. And I think it's like definitely opportunity based. It's going to be huge for a lot of different people and communities.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, what we were talking about earlier, for anyone, I noticed a lot of people who watched it, they commented on this, was when they announced the winners, you know, everyone was like congratulating each other.
Yeah.
They weren't like, oh, I'm pissed I got second or whatever. Like, everyone was clapping each other. Like, if they didn't land a trick, they'd help, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Skateboarding is a very, very, very tight community. Yeah. And you could see that, I think. And I think as long as that continues, like, positively, like, I would hate for it to get, like, crazy, like, Tanya Harding aggressive. I would prefer it to just continue in this place.
You guys
place
break
of
your
like,
own
we're
bones.
Here. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're good. We don't need no pipes thrown at us. We just need to continue in like a place where we're working together.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it'll be cool. And I think like I'm just waiting for like all these kids who you may not have known otherwise, like these kids who are winning medals. You know, they're now prolific skaters in their own right. Like skateboarding is probably like one of the most diverse. I always compare it to the music industry because it's much more of, I think, an artistic expression, but I think in terms of generalized success and where you can really make a name for yourself and have your own success, it's just so wide and it's so broad. You don't have to fit into a category or like be a world champion. I think it's much more about being like an individual and an artist and kind of just like having a story. And I think in that sense, it's cool because you're going to have these kids who may not have fit the core skate world, but they're going to, you know, thrive and do their thing and be positive influences on other people. So I think that's like really wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that as a whole, the world is so much better, so much more creative, and just such a more fun place because of the sport of skateboarding.
Mm.
I'm just happy it exists.
Me too.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if we do want to start building more skate parks wherever we can, for non-skaters and skaters alike, is there a way to be able to push for that in communities? Like, how does it actually happen? I'm sure you guys have been involved in some
That's
ways.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So it works different everywhere.
Everywhere it's different.
It has to do with just how the cities allocate space and what their motivations are.
What they deem
are.
As important,
exactly.
Yeah.
The best example, I think, is Copenhagen, where...
I agree.
There, the city planners have taken the idea that skateboarders are going to skate in the plazas and, you know, the boards are going to shoot out into traffic and hurt people. So they've worked with skaters to create skate areas within the city center that is away from traffic. So it just flows with the city more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a yes and mentality.
Exactly.
Rather than the no, like the people who were just up here before, they were talking about addiction and how some people, like some politicians don't want to put Narcan in certain areas because they say it'll increase drug use. And there's like, wait, no, that's not, I mean, not to equate skateboarding to drug use.
No, but it's like...
But there's a kind of creative yes and solution.
Yeah. There has to be a solution, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do it anyway. And then it just like breeds that thing where like we're using space that's not being used and you're telling us we can. It creates a bad energy. So it's like working together. That's the main way to do it, you know?
I think skateboarders are a great, great, like, economy-building group of people. I mean, we use public transportation when it's available. We spend money at your local gas station. We buy drinks and candy, and we are kind of on the streets, like, really, really all the time. And I just think that, yeah, to ignore a certain group is just would be such a bummer, but it's also just such a opportunity to create something that is creative, and also it draws people. I mean, like, we're talking about Copenhagen. So the city of Copenhagen, Denmark, has a open festival called the Copenhagen Pro, which is basically where, like, all the best cool skaters and whoever else wants to can go for like 10 days. And there's skate specific events through the city the whole week or the whole 10 days that the event is on. And it's so rad because they shut down the city hall and they have you skate in the city hall. Like, they allow it for like one day of the year. Pro skaters of all over, from all over the world, skate these really, really unique spots that are like truly closed off. And it's this mutual respect thing where, you know, during the time that they're not allowed to, nobody, you know, crosses boundaries and has a lot of respect in the city. And then when it's time, they do this really monumental event. And it's just so interesting because that goes back to the architecture. There's so many places, like this year they opened up this inside gymnasium that has this bizarre, like, green slide that goes into a basketball court. And this, like, you would get in so much trouble for skating. I mean, and it's on a basketball court, so it's not designed. It would get really ruined by skateboards, but for this one day they had a whole jam there, and the footage was cool, and the city gets behind it, and I think that's really, really cool.
It's super cool, and I'm just earnestly stoked that you guys are ambassadors for the sport. I think it's really cool. So Nora, thanks, and Nestor, Kyle, give them a round of applause, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
We have time for a couple questions. And if anyone has a question, please come right up to the stage so we don't get feedback. And they will answer it for you. So raise your hand if you have a question. And come on up. Don't be shy, everyone. Who's got a question?
Nobody. We nailed it.
I think he's got
one. Going once. Going twice.
Kyle has a question.
Going three times. She's got a question.
Okay, there you go.
Hello.
Hi, Katie. I brought her here today so that she would ask me whatever she's going to ask me.
I really am just going this off of the top of my head. Okay. Can you talk about how you feel? Have you ever felt... When was the first time that... Were you cool as a kid, or what, like...
No.
Or, like, what was, like, oh, I have friends, oh, we all like to do things. Was that have anything to do with skateboarding?
No, I had a Beanie Baby club, and I was, like, 11. That was not cool. No, but I had friends. I don't know. I didn't make the soccer team when I was 12, and it really... messed me up because I couldn't sit at the same table at lunch, and it was just a really not positive experience for me. And that around that time was when I found skateboarding, and I found that being removed from my peers was really healthy because I was able to, like, create an identity for myself that didn't exist just in, like, sixth grade. And so that was really profound. And then as I get older, like, middle school and high school were way cooler, and everybody was like, there's the skater girl. And they would yell at me to do kickflips and whatever. But I don't know. It was just, when I found skateboarding, it was very profound to me and very positive. But yeah, Katie, I wasn't cool in school, man.
Great way to end. Appreciate
I also
that.
Went through yeah. a fingerless glove stage, but we're not going to talk about it. Nestor, were you cool in school? For sure. Look at this guy. Look at this fucking guy.
That's funny. I remember getting kicked off the soccer team because I would stop going to practice because I wanted to go skate instead.
I showed up to practice.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Kyle, were you cool in school?
For I sure, I'm cool. I wear a fanny pack during my interviews. Sexy never left.
Kyle's
baby.
From Santa Cruz.
Come on.
He's for sure. Look at this guy. Yeah. He's cool. Kyle is cool. We all know it.
All right, we got time for one more question if anyone has one, and then we'll be moving it right along. Yes, sir. Come on up.
That wasn't cool. That was triggering.
I'm triggered.
Was there ever a time in your life when you first started skating or when you got really, really good that you shocked yourself that you tried that trick and you even shocked yourself that you did it? And what did that do for your confidence as a person?
Great question.
Ideas? Let me think. I think, you get surprised when you do a trick. Learning a trick either happens naturally or you try it nonstop and you think you'll never do it. And then you almost black out that you did it. And you're like, whoa, I'm riding away and I did it. Especially like as we become pro skaters and we have to film tricks most of the time that are like beyond our ability, so it's good enough to be on film. So yeah, you just try nonstop for hours and hours and hours and you finally do it and you can't believe you did it and you're glad it was caught on film. But yeah, I think it's just like overall it helps, you know, with determination and maybe some like weird obsessive thing that is inherent in skateboarders where they cannot give up, right?
Yeah, I would agree with Nestor. I think I've often found myself in a place where I've tried doing a trick for days or hours or whatever. Specifically, I did a trick once that took over 2 years, 5 different trips back to the spot, and over 25 hours at the spot during those years and trips. And when I did it, I was like disappointed because I was like so bummed out by how long it took me when the way I did it seemed so fluid and like easy. But then when I review the footage and like I see it at the end of my video, I'm so thrilled and excited. So that's kind of in the moment, it's really intense and it's really hard to, you know, sometimes be positive even when it finally happens. But, afterward, reviewing the footage is really cool. I also won a contest once in China that was like a world championship event, and it was bizarre because I would do these events, but I would very rarely podium. And winning the contest and doing the run I had set out to do, that for me was cool because it was still skateboarding, but it seemed very out of my element. And that was a cool thing to get to do something that was skateboarding, but out of my element in that sense of skateboarding. It's cool.
Beautiful. Everyone, Nora Vasconcelos and Nestor Judkins.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kyle.
That's our show. I'm going to play you out with a song called Flashing Lights by Sourgrass. And you can head over to my website, kyle.surf, or click the link in the description below to sign up for my newsletter. Get out in the water, whatever body of water you are closest to, lake, river, ocean, or bathtub. I promise it will make your day better.
out. One last dance for the sun burns out. One last song that we could sing. Let's go out.